Okay, 85% of all arsonists in the United States are raised by single mothers, right?
Right.
How do you feel about that statistic?
I like fire.
Well played.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the show. Before we get into part two of our discussion, I did want to take a few minutes to go through all of the questions that we did not get to in this conversation. And again, my apologies. Hopefully there'll be an opportunity to talk more with that in the future. If any of these questions are interesting to you, please feel free to post in the group and tag Thad in the post, or you can reach him on Twitter as well. I'm thinking he'd probably be happy to address many of these things. And like I said before, we'll discuss it at the end of this conversation. We may work more with him in the future, so there may be more opportunities for listener questions. And of course, if you're pressed for time or you think it just might be kind of frustrating to listen to me read questions that are not fully addressed in the conversation, you can skip to about the 12-minute mark on your counter. That's where the second portion of the Q&A begins. So, all right, here's the list of everything we didn't get to. The first one comes from Brent Ritchie. I imagine this will cause anxiety, but I think there are unresolved loose ends concerning the dreaded non-aggression principle from the last show. It seemed the debate came down to the non-aggression principle versus self-interest. One implicit loophole, which was glaring to me in the last discussion, was when Thaddeus gave the example of what he tells his son, that being, I tell my son not to hit other kids because he'll get hit back. Self-interest. So in Thaddeus's definition of self-interest, if using his example again, his son thought he could hit someone and get away with it, i.e. a disabled or similar child who could not defend his or herself, would the action be acceptable? If not, would he please clarify or pin down his definition of self-interest? Now, we do address that topic, but I didn't specifically read Brent's question or give him credit for asking it. It came in the form of another question asked by Allie, but that is covered in the show. Then we go on to Gabrielle. I would like to ask that about libertarians and intellectuals. Is it ethical to work for a university and apply for federal grants to fund your work? What would his ex-colleagues have thought if he brought it up? And is he happier being outside of academia now, financially or otherwise? What would you say about a smart person who can't find a position at an R1 university and now feels depressed about it? Well, Thad is still teaching at Occidental, and he is very much inside of academia and some of the criticisms, even though I do want to say this. Somebody commented on the first part that it was a bit of an ambush, and I certainly didn't mean for the discussion to be an ambush of Thad. I wanted West there to help flesh out the objectivism piece a little bit better, and Carlos, of course, is very competent when it comes to addressing the ethics issue. But what I guess I didn't account for is that all three of us would want to get at him at once, and that happened a few times. So again, my fault as the moderator. Thad was definitely a good sport and stayed calm, and I really think did a great job considering that it did turn out to be a 3-on-1 situation. Now, back to the criticism that I've seen about Thaddeus is that he can be a little bit dodgy. I remember reading somebody sent me an email or made a comment saying that's certainly one of the qualities of an academic. But that criticism, plus some of the other ones that I've received, like there's many people who don't like how Thad seems to laugh at us a lot. I think he is far more thoughtful than many of the academics I've known, and I really appreciate that. So Thad is still working inside the system, and he will actually talk a little bit about that in this show. But again, it doesn't come up through this specific question, so apology to Gabrielle. Next, Drea. I would like to ask Thaddeus to go into detail about the nuclear family. Should we be living in extended families? How can we get back to a balance in our culture? In our culture, we don't live with our extended families, but we also need support raising our children. How do we go about creating an extended family without actually moving in together? I would also like to ask him about sexuality. Is it preferable to be in an open relationship? What's wrong with monogamy? If you have kids with someone, I would think that having an open relationship may confuse children. Basically, I would love to hear more about nuclear families versus extended families and about the role sexuality plays in a healthy culture. That's an excellent question. I'm really sorry we didn't get to it. Next question from Justin Pope. Clearly, the hookers and alcohol of revolutionary America cost money. So those who partook of those pleasures had to be working somewhere to support those activities. Why wasn't that level of productivity enough for those we call the founding fathers? Was it wanted merely because they would have more to tax? During one of the shows, you pointed out that people don't exercise because they are rebelling against being forced to go to PE class or gym class. But that seems a bit short-sighted given that sex is much better if you have stamina for it, and dancing for 4 hours is much more fun than dancing for merely one. Is there historical evidence of the Puritans standing in the way of the implementation of labor-saving devices that would reduce the time required for labor and increase the time available for leisure? It seems there should be if doing work was an end unto itself. While it is true that companies do spend quite a bit of money finding out what consumers want, quite a bit of money has also been spent to dumb down consumers, so that in the words of Homer Simpson, I don't have to know what I want, the TV will tell me. In addition to the dumbing down, many products create an either psychological or physical need to continue consuming it. Cigarettes and fast food come to mind as examples. Isn't it more complicated than just the consumer chooses what they want? In many areas, your options are constrained because either they don't exist, like in elections, ingredients in the product create barriers to shifting away from it, or the full side effects are hidden from the consumer's view. Also, would have been a very interesting topic. Next, John Kedrowski. I'd like to get Thaddeus' perspective on the history of the Liberty Movement. I wonder if he could shed a new way of looking at how the philosophy developed. I'm curious if there is a particular system of ethics to which he subscribes. I'm also curious how he justifies motivation and how he justifies the sacrifice of an immediate pleasure for a long-term gain. That does come up to some degree in this second portion of the conversation. Philip Egger, next question. I'd like to hear Thad's take on peaceful parenting. I came to peaceful parenting based on the moral argument, but I'd like to hear a self-interest perspective on the topic. Perhaps he can discuss how familial and patriarchal language creeps into the narrative of the state. And even though I didn't ask Philip's question, we did just nick the surface of that topic in this portion of the discussion as well. Shooting over to the website just to see if there's any more. Yes. B in Phoenix. Capitalism is a statist economic system. Discuss. And another listener named Lee Anon. Two questions or comments about modern day renegades. What does Thad think of the 3D printed gun in the Silk Road and the reactions to them, especially from politicians and progressives? Are these the modern day renegades? But it seems like there is a difference in that Cody Wilson and DPR are conscious of their rebellion and the effect they wanted to have. I think that a modern version of Thad's old-timey renegades are the digital pirates. They overcame the moralizing about you wouldn't steal a car, so you shouldn't steal music. They didn't really care about the morality of their actions. They just wanted music and movies that were just a few clicks away, i.e. instant pleasure gratification. They sort of led the way, perhaps unknowingly, to the P2P, peer-to-peer revolution, and reshaping the music industry, and even to stuff like Bitcoin. Looking forward to the interview. Keegan also asked a similar question. I'd like to hear if Thad has heard of Renegade Cody Wilson and the Defense Distributed Project, and the 3D printing of guns, how that will affect the expansion or further restriction of civil rights. They both have lots of irreverent thoughts on state history and philosophy. Not sure if they are similar people in values, but they seem to be quite similar in rebelliousness. And one more listener named Jeff asks, why is America named America? Now, we know America is named after the explorer Amerigo Vespucci, but I don't actually know the process of how that came to be. And I don't think this is the time for that exploration, but that's a very interesting question and an interesting topic. What were the politics involved in choosing that name over something like Columbia, for example? And finally, our friend Daryl Becker. I wish to ask Thad of his knowledge and understanding of Holocaust history revisionists, such as Carolyn Jaeger. Naturally, if he is unfamiliar or has only cursory knowledge of this subject, well, there's not much point in hearing his opinions on it, same as for everyone else. My own ancestry seems to give me license to question such things without being given to any ad hominems like anti-Semite. though the ad hominem of self-hating Jew or lizard Jew. Thanks for bringing that up, Daryl. We don't talk about them enough on the show. Or just the lizards, the reptilians in general. We really need to be holding their feet to the fire. You know, and their feet aren't even really bothered by fire, I think. So we're way behind. I'm sorry, hold on a second. Though the ad hominem of self-hating Jew or lizard Jew might be delivered by those who don't use their logical fallacy filter. First, evidence being grammar. Second, conclusions. Third, practical applications and repeated experiments by many. Thanks for that question. That would have been a fascinating one. I'm sorry we didn't get to it. It definitely would be interesting to see if there are any third rails that Thad is not willing to touch. So if this show leaves you unsatisfied, I would point you to our bonus content section, the AV Club. There is a preliminary discussion that we had a couple nights before, a planning session. Thad is not in that. There will also be an after show with me, Carlos, and Wes that I will post probably later this week. There's a pre-show with me, Thad, Antigone, and Carlos from June. And there was a preliminary discussion which involved planning for the series between me and Thad back in February. That's all in the AV Club. If you just search the tag Thaddeus Russell, you can find everything. And certainly would appreciate your support if you can manage it. Okay, thanks everyone for listening. Again, look forward to your feedback. I will be live on LRN Monday night, Monday the 29th at 10 Eastern. So you can listen on lrn.fm or watch at schoolsucksproject.com/live. It will be me, Gardner, and Osborne, and we will be fielding questions about topics covered on our shows in the past month. All right, here we go. All right, question number two. And I don't know.
Are we going to question number two, or can we finally get to this fucking non-aggression principle ethics stuff? Because that would be fun.
Yeah, that's question two.
That's it is? Fantastic.
Well, no, there's actually going to be a couple of questions, and we'll see how we do.
But what would it matter if there's no reality, Carlos?
All right, deep breath.
In my mind, right? I can travel to Alpha Centauri.
But you're still using your mind in order to be able to interpret that. So you still have to be using your brain in that particular case.
Question two. All right, this is a long one. I'm going to read it in its entirety, and then I'll let you react that. It comes from Allie. My question comes from my thoughts on the last Q&A episode with Thaddeus. My opinion is that stealing is always bad practice because of the golden rule of property rights or the non-aggression principle. Regardless of how big the group is you're stealing from, how many handouts they receive from the state, or whether or not you get caught doing it. Thaddeus claimed that his only problem with stealing is in cases where it does not serve your self-interest, in that you may get caught, in which case future trade with that person or organization would be impossible or limited. But then he claims that it's okay to steal from large corporations such as Walmart because they receive corporate handouts from the state. Let's put aside the fact that it's Walmart's self-interest to accept these handouts and instead explore which place you're better off stealing from based purely on self-interest, Walmart or your locally owned corner store. If you get caught stealing from the small business, the only cost is that you can't shop there. Worst case scenario, the word spreads among business owners. You have a poor reputation in this limited sphere of perhaps your town, and you might even have to move to another town. But if you get caught stealing from a large chain like Walmart and tarnish your reputation with them, you're worse off than in other examples because Walmart is everywhere. It doesn't matter where you are. If you're blacklisted by Walmart, you are arguably much worse off than if you can no longer shop at Bob's Discount Beverages. So by Thaddeus's logic, wouldn't you be better off stealing from small businesses because of their limited influence versus a big corporation like Walmart?
Oh, sure. I mean, so that's just a pragmatic question. What we were talking about, I think, with the Walmart example is the non-aggression principle, right? And so all I was doing there, I think, was stating that Walmart's existence is initiation of force by the state. That the force has already been, and aggression has already been initiated by the state against us. by making Walmart, by having Walmart exist, by building the roads to the front door of Walmart, by protecting it with its police force, and all the rest, and all the other subsidies it's been given to exist, right? Which we all agree it happens, right? Anyone who knows anything about corporatism knows that Walmart's one of the primary corporatist entities in our world, right? So
that
was my argument about that. Now, the non-aggression principle does not. All I was saying was the non-aggression principle to me does not protect Walmart. That's all. Now, that's number one. Number two is, you know, then it's a pragmatic question of whether it will serve your own interest to steal from Walmart, to burn it down, to strike against Walmart, to boycott it, whatever it is, right? And that's a separate question, right? And that depends on particular place and time. I was just intervening against the non-aggression principle, which I still don't. I think is silly. But especially in regards to corporatist entities like Walmart, which exist because of the initiation of state aggression.
Okay. So to the extent that they do. Go ahead, Carlos.
Okay. But this is sort of off topic. I mean, I'm happy to talk about it, but that's what that was about, right? You guys get the difference. It wasn't about relativism, but it was about the NAP.
Yeah, okay. And in relation to that, what should be understood, there was a point of clarification that you kind of just helped me out with, which essentially that you're not holding the NAP as being a valid premise, and you're taking it to the extreme of, well, if you're going to view the NAP as being a serious proposition, why should we include Walmart into that? Because part of the way that they are able to exist is because of state mechanisms. But for me, in order to hold that rationally consistent, you have an old woman who lives on a street, right? In order to be able to get to her house, you have to go through a road. Her home is protected by cops. And presently, she is on Medicaid, right? Medicaid in order to be able to take care of her medical bills. She also uses Social Security. And now at her older age, she's also using food stamps because, you know, reasons as far as employment are concerned. Her entire existence at this point, many aspects of it at least, are a result of state mechanisms, right?
Mm-hmm.
So from an argument in regards to NAP, there's no way I could justify, you know, using force against her. But similarly, I don't think I could use necessarily an argument to be able to rob from Walmart in that particular case. I can't seem to find a very rational argument for why I should be able to steal from Walmart, but I can't steal from that old woman.
Yeah, well, again, it's sort of like, this is why the NAP doesn't make sense to me.
Exactly.
Because there's initiation of force all around us by the state, state. So that it's a libertarian principle really throws me for a loop. I mean, I really don't get it.
So from the argumentation ethics thing, as far as NAP is concerned, again, it's a weird thing because it's a mixture of trying to find logically consistent ways by which to set up norms by living in a world with rivalrous goods.
Mm-hmm. Ethics, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, exactly. So in that particular case, the NAP is simply a result of that. It's not like physics, right? It's not like the idea of gravity as far as that's concerned, right? Because I can't choose and this does get us back to the objectivity thing. I can choose to think in my mind if I jump, I won't fall, but I will fall in that particular case. Now, in regards to ethics, I can choose to act in a certain manner, whether or not it's to rob you or not rob you. But in order to make some claim, if we're in court or something else, in order to justify using violence against you, I can't really make a rational claim that it was okay to initiate coercion upon you without at the same time making the claim that by using argumentation, I was able to sway people's minds. So there's no reason for me to respect your claim to self-ownership, right? If you're refusing to to respect my claim to self-ownership. I hope there was some clarity in that. I went on for a bit.
I mean, to me, the principle of self-interest covers it, and we don't need anything else.
Okay.
That's all.
All right.
Because there's the golden rule, which is a moral claim, right? Which is not what I'm making. And then there's the golden rule as a pragmatic rule, right? Very different thing. So there's following the golden rule because God says it's good, right? I'm not into that. And that's I think practically what the NAP is, it is a moral claim, right? And there's pragmatic golden rule, which I love, which I think is wonderful, which is treat people the way you want to be treated, right? So I'm nice to you guys because I want you to be nice to me, and that actually creates a lot of wonderful spontaneous order.
Yeah,
and that's all we need. We don't need anything else.
It minimizes.
So the downside of the NAP, to me, I don't think it's evil, but I do think it has some negative consequences. One of which is that it tells people like minimum wage workers who work in the Walmart in the middle of the Arizona desert, net where there are no other options at all, to abide by whatever Walmart tells them to do in terms of their wages and working conditions and hours and the rest of it. Right. It also tells potential competitive business owners in that area to just let Walmart exist, even though the fucking state with all its guns basically built that thing and monopolized that land. I think it actually ends up being anti-libertarian in a lot of ways.
There are a lot bigger fish to fry in this matter, though. I mean, seriously, the corporations are down the pecking order, unless you want to get into the military contractors, you know.
What do you mean? I don't know what you mean. What do you mean? Walmart's not a major
in terms of the injustices
player?
To society, because the people that work at Walmart choose to actually go there, and it's air conditioned. It's not out in the middle of the desert. I guess you could hunt for lizards out there, but there are competitive forces in the semi-free and hardly free marketplace that we have today. But this this is overlooking the nature of statism itself, which is all about conflict, all about aggression. So the non-aggression principle is about getting rid of that from society, this foundation of aggression that we have, whereas it excludes itself from the moral realm, from the ethical realm, and says it's okay for us to tax you and regulate you, but you can't do that to us.
Yeah, it's interesting that we identified Walmart, and I think we even agreed, Carlos, that that was in many cases, at least in the scenario that we laid down in the first discussion about this, the original, the initiator of force. That on behalf the state on behalf of Walmart had initiated force. Well, let's even just say that. I mean, that kind of shows why there's this reliance on the non-aggression principle. Why we think it's such an important tenet of libertarianism, right? Because if that's just not even a concept that most people consider, the government can do these things. Mm-hmm. It's like a Sean Hannity. It's like a Sean Hannity truth.
Would you guys be opposed to someone blowing up Raytheon?
Well, there's lots of follow-up questions. I mean,
that's the most classic corporatist entity, right? It's a private corporation. Hey, it's a business, but we all know.
Well, that's
exists because of the initiation of
fascist relationship with the state. Obviously,
if
violence isn't going to achieve the end that you want to achieve, which is freedom.
And I agree with that standpoint. And also when we're using words like private, it's kind of like whenever the government uses the word privatized, which means
still a monopoly. When the railroads were built in the 19th century, right? Again, the Union Army, the National Army, and during the Civil Wars, the Union Army, literally, seized that land from people, right? And then protected that land from the Indians and by the way, and some white settlers also, as they marched across the Western Plains building that railroad. I mean, it was clearly an initiation of state aggression to establish a monopoly on that land.
Yeah,
right?
It's a grave injustice.
So,
outrageous.
So to say to the Indians who came along with their rifles and started shooting at the railroad company as it was doing this and the soldiers, to say, well, wait a second, you shouldn't be doing this because of the non-aggression principle, I would say, no, they were actually acting, and here's the thing, in self-defense.
So that is not a violation of the NAP if it's in self-defense.
We all agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, so fighting against Walmart is an act of self-defense.
Well, contextually, don't you think that's a big stretch? Because who's doing the violation of the customers when they
Walmart
go in there and voluntarily purchase
that land because of the initiation of force by the state and its guns?
Okay, so, but there's parts there too.
The main initiator is this meme we call government, right? And how do you? I mean, ideas are bulletproof, right? So no amount of violence is going to bring this meme to an end. It's going to be thinking about things in a clear way, not violently, because that's got us into this mess to begin with. People not getting along in a way that's respectful, mutually, you know.
So some people would argue, I mean, I think that there's a point there that, you know, you've talked about in the book and in these past shows, Thad, that a lot of these injustices or lack of freedoms were remedied by people violating property rights or people acting out aggressively. But at the same time, there's people violating property rights and acting out of aggressively that are scaling up all kinds of other problems.
Not people. The state. That's what I'm getting at. Aggression by the state, right? I think I'm being more libertarian than you guys.
I think we just got that just got twisted up to me. The principle of property rights and non-aggression, right? There's people violating them to, as you say, to push these freedoms forward. But obviously, if we don't hold those things as axioms, then the state can certainly use them as well. The violation of the NAP and the violation of property rights.
The state will do what it wants to do, regardless of what we have to say. Right, we all agree on that. The state doesn't care what we have to say.
And
the state
has only
one interest, which is control over us. We all agree on that.
And that's because it has support by the majority of people. Essentially, they haven't thought through these things because they went to state schools, right? So they were taught that it's okay to violate people's rights, to violate property rights, because we're the state, we're the government, and we're going to provide things for people. You know?
Oh, okay, I got you. Yeah, sure. So the war of ideas, of course, is important. I get you. That's a very important point. I agree
absolutely.
With you. But so can we go back to, I do want to say something again about this relativism business, right?
Sure.
There you go. Back to philosophy again. Jeez.
Yeah, no. it's very, very, very important to me, I think, in real, in flesh and blood ways. Mm-hmm. So objective claims of objective reality, truth claims rooted in nature. Okay. If you look at the history of them, it's very, very ugly. And very, very unfree. Mm-hmm. What the big ones are in our culture, right? This shouldn't be news to you, are things like black people are biologically inferior. That's just in nature. It is in written in nature that black people, people of African descent, are inferior and should be slaves. Or should be not allowed to drink from particular water fountains. Or should not have particular jobs. Or should not be allowed to own particular businesses because it is written in nature. That was an objective truth claim.
By some, there were some that vehemently disagreed with that.
By most, by the vast, vast majority, right?
True,
that was
but
a cultural,
there were abolitionists.
That was a cultural truism.
There were people calling bullshit on that at the time.
Sure, of course, but a minority, that doesn't matter. Yes, of course, but it was the dominant claim, right?
Okay, so but
my
dominant claim doesn't make it true,
claim.
Though.
Hold on, it was a truth claim, okay? And it actually had, as you guys know, it did tremendous damage in
absolutely.
The world.
Most majority claims are false, and they do tremendous damage.
Well, it wasn't that it was a majority claim. It was a truth claim based in nature. And it was very hard to argue against it, right? Because, as I said, when you make a truth claim rooted in nature, hold on, you remove it from analysis, and you say, well, you know, there was no way to argue against it. It was very difficult to argue against it.
So it was based in their interpretation of nature. It wasn't based in nature itself, because now we know, right? I mean, the principle of falsification would have helped these folks from being so dogmatic about things, right?
Okay. Well, so anyway, let me continue my history of this, right? So another one was that women, right, are biologically suited to being child rearers and homemakers and sex objects, which means that they should be in the kitchen and in the bedroom, and they shouldn't be out of the house. They should never be on the street. They shouldn't be in public. They shouldn't be college students. They shouldn't be professors. They shouldn't be political leaders, social, whatever. They shouldn't own businesses, right? You know this, okay? So that was another biological truth claim.
But it's false.
A natural and essentialist truth claim. Here's another one. Homosexuality is unnatural, right? Another dominant truth claim rooted in nature. And these are all the essence, the origin, the whole structure of those arguments was in claims about objective, natural truth.
But
right?
Why were they erroneous?
Hold on. One more and I'll let you guys talk.
Yeah.
Eugenics, right? Poor people were poor because they were naturally, biologically inferior. Mm-hmm. That was it. And so we had 40,000 women forcibly sterilized by court order because of that truth claim.
Horrific.
Okay. So this is really, so to be in the business of going out and trying to find the natural truth about human beings seems to me to be fundamentally at odds with the project of human liberty.
Okay, I just have a problem with the employment of a historical argument to make that point. Just for a little context, okay, when we're talking about the philosophy of objectivism, we're talking about something that started 70 years ago. And the idea behind it, the best I understand, was to kind of reunite these schools that had been at odds between rationalism and empiricism, inductive and deductive, to say, look, you need both of these things, right? It's not one or the other, and kind of as a counter to the insanity of something like German idealism. So we're talking about something that's relatively recent, and you're getting this kind of, with your historical argument, you're getting this kind of running start of thousands of years, if you want, of fucking insanity of people making truth claims to kind of railroad at the end what is kind of a positive development, which is in many ways the return to like Aristotelian logic, right? Which is something that I think we're all for. You know, I mean, I don't think you would throw that out either, right? The value of that.
I don't know. Depends. So again, as I said at the very beginning, I'm not making an argument against Randian objectivism. As I said, I don't know anything about it. We're only talking about objective truth claims.
So all I'm saying is I just want to speak up and say that I'm having a little bit of a problem with the employment of a historical argument to counter a philosophy. Right.
Why? I mean, what's wrong with using historical arguments?
Because you're making this category where most of the things that fit into that category are insane. From like, I'm a god, so you should spend your whole life building my cemetery in the shape of giant triangles, up to homosexuals are evil or whatever, or women are inferior, or we're going to euthanize people.
So, Brett, so here's the thing.
Okay.
Man. Here's the thing. When I make a claim about your essence, your natural essence, am I working against your freedom or for it?
Mm.
Dude, we're for self-determination, right?
Okay.
When I, and even worse, a culture makes a claim about your essence, right? You are really suited to do something or not do something else. Obviously, that's an attempt to restrict your freedom, man.
But I feel like you're reaching back and pulling
it's prescribing behavior for you. But your essence is a reasoning being, and that needs to be respected because you're an autonomous agent. So to use aggression against that autonomy is obviously a violation of you. So you can actually
why would we want to even try to find the essence of Brett?
The essence of Brett is universalized throughout society, right?
The objective truth about Brett. Why would we even want to do that?
Everyone is Brett.
Go ahead.
I'm talking too much, but I'll just try to make it. Just as people fundamentally committed to human individual freedom, right, and self-determination, that's the last thing we should be doing. We should be letting Brett determine his own truth, however he wants to determine, on his own.
Absolutely.
And do what he wants, right?
Absolutely.
So just
the whole
project of trying to find the truth about him seems to me to be antithetical to the Liberty Project.
Well, the historical examples that you gave, I'm understanding from you that you're disputing those so-called truth claims, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
well, that's one thing.
In your process of disputation, are you not vetting for contradictions, looking for contradictions, disputing the claims that are being made? In other words, putting an objective lens on and saying, is this actually true? It turns out to be bullshit. What they tried to substantiate was unsubstantiated.
I'm saying even within their own logical structures, they're just tautologies, right? So what they did was you've heard of the science of phrenology of the 19th century, right? Everybody was into it. They studied skulls, and from that they made these claims about the essence, the natural essence of all these people,
and they swore up and down that it was efficacious, right?
So they looked at Africans, and they were like, oh, the skull is this size, and it has these bumps, and therefore they're inferior, right? Yeah. So in other words, they're inferior because their skulls are inferior. Right. It was a tautology. Everything's a tautology. There is no, they can never, ever definitively, even within their own logical structures, ever definitively show me that it's truth. Because also they revise their ideas of truth all the time. Phrenology, everyone thought that was real and truth and science, and now no one does.
Yeah. And what caused people to change their mind about it?
Ideas. Ideas changed. Right?
Well, I would say that their claims were falsified. I mean,
new,
look at the double
new
blind.
Ideas came into circulation.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm an idealist in that way.
Okay.
History is determined by ideas. Absolutely.
Yeah. And ideas rule the world, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
But
absolutely.
Ideas also have a kind of root in information.
Is there something in reality to which those ideas refer?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not.
No.
God is not one of them.
No. Because even facts change all the time.
Facts change? So has it changed the fact that we're talking on Skype? Has that changed?
Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah. We went through this like 30 times.
Yeah, Carlos, let's pause for a second.
Carlos is feeling very discontented.
Yeah, let's pause for a second.
Care to
Carlos
share?
Has taken off his headphones. What's happening?
Have you drunk all of your Mountain Dew?
It's been like a circle fucking argument. Like, I think Thaddeus has pointed out his point. Wes, you've very much pointed out your point, which I consider valid. But this has been like an hour and a half circle jerk. And it's fine. But I think I respect the audience enough to be able to take the evidence brought up by Thaddeus and the evidence brought up by you.
So debate over? So you're thinking?
Carlos actually brings up a good point, Thad. I get emails. And people say, why are you letting this guy get away with this? Why didn't you say anything when he said this?
Because you respect the fucking audience enough to be able to figure things out because you assume that they're smart, which they are because they listen to this fucking podcast.
What is the problem? I don't know what the problem is.
Carlos feels like we've kind of been going around in circles here. And that was the point that I was trying to bring up is that some people expressed some discontent that I was letting you, in their mind, I was letting you get away with things.
Okay.
Right.
Well,
and what I said was, and what I said was, I respect the intelligence of this audience enough to let anybody on this show and say whatever they want. Right. Even if they were, and obviously you brought a tremendous amount of value to the podcast, not just in the discussion it's generating, the new information, and also challenging a belief system that can be admittedly sometimes very dogmatic. And we talked about that before. So there's been all kinds of value, what you've brought to the show and the conversations we've had. I would let a complete fucking idiot come on the show and say whatever they wanted because I respect the intelligence of the audience.
Don't do that.
I think that would be fun. I'm going to put an ad on Craigslist.
No, you already were
Need progressive to host radio show.
It was called Free Talk Live, and you were doing it for a long time, and you were good to go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's so, Carlos, back to you. So... yeah, I thought that was at about the 60-minute mark. That's why I stopped us because I thought we were. Yeah, and that's what I said. That's why I very deliberately moved us to
back to relativism.
Question issues of specific politics, and then moving it to history, the historical record is what I did because I thought that made it much more specific and concrete and easy, made it easier to understand what I was getting at.
So, here's the thing: is that
and relevant, very relevant,
and I understand the relevant nature of it. Correct, but. When you were discussing the essence of Brett in that particular case, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a problem in trying to understand how the human brain works, depending on how external factors will lead to it, basically. So I think, okay, so let me bring it up, for example. I think this might kind of piss you off when people do this. So we'll go, people raised by single mothers, okay, 85% of all arsonists in the United States are raised by single mothers, right?
Right, right.
How do you feel about that statistic?
I like fire.
Okay. Well played.
So that's half tongue-in-cheek and half actually my point, right?
Okay,
So we operate in a culture, right, where there's general agreement that... whatever, setting fires to private property or whatever it is bad, right? And I'm saying that that's not necessarily, naturally, the truth about that thing, right? When I was 15, I sure as hell didn't think that.
Yeah.
I love setting things on fire, and I still do, as a matter of fact. And the only reason I don't now is because I'll get in trouble, and I'll go to prison.
That's true. Fire is a
lot of fun. What if you could get away with it?
Oh God, yeah, I'd do it. Now I wouldn't do it again. I would follow my pragmatic rule of my pragmatic golden rule, right? I wouldn't set fire to people I want to be friends with. I wouldn't set fire to your studio. That would work against my self interest, right? The politics of self interest is what I'm about.
And
I want to do podcasts with you. I want to be friends with you. So setting fire to your shit.
That would be an amazing conclusion to this series, though, if you flew to New Hampshire and set our studio on fire. That would be amazing.
You have 10 minutes to piss me off, so it might work out. I don't know.
Yeah, I did want to clarify.
Okay.
Thaddeus's point, I mean, if people were acting in that form of self-interest, I can completely understand that. I think there's a guttural reaction, though, that I have when it comes to the issue of self-interest, which is simply that it is in the narcissistic psychopath's
self-interest in it for his own mind to say assault another individual or do something really, really fucked up. And I think there's a part of me that just thinks that's why the self-interest argument isn't enough.
Oh, but it is. Because when, which, and I absolutely agree, there are people out there who want to come kill me and rape my girlfriend and whatever, just for the fun of it. Right.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, right? So we have a choice, right? What do we do? We have three, I think we have three choices. One, call the cops. We don't love that one, right? Because we're anti-statists. Two is tell them they're bad according to the non-aggression principle. Right? That seems to me not to be too effective with those types of people. Or three is for you and me and my girlfriend and my son to get AK-47s.
Yeah, the point of...
Right? Such, I mean, yeah, so it's very simple to me. I mean, I just don't see why the politics of self-defense is not more than enough for libertarianism.
Yeah, basically where it starts to come into more importance essentially is in cases like court and things like that, and just trying to figure out what is just and an unjust action, you know, and how can you justify
get
your
out of the
action.
Business of like deciding what's just and unjust. Live according to your own self-interest and we'll do just fine.
No, what I mean in that particular case is if I'm in a property dispute with Wes or something because I decided to light his house on fire while masturbating because I thought it was cool, mm-hmm. and then we both go to court, you know, or in order to try to figure this out, then I would provide evidence to see whether my wanting to jack off and light his house on fire was just or not in comparison. So that's where I think the importance can come.
You wanted the house to be really hot. Is that what the deal is?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, gotcha.
I just wanted it to be more warm.
Okay. See, when I first came into libertarianism, I actually thought it was the politics of self-interest. As you guys know, I pretty much found out about the NAP from you about a year ago. Like, so, and when it sort of hit me that that's what you all believed in, I was like, wait, why do you even need that? It's not, I don't think it's evil. I just think it's, although I think there can be bad consequences to it, but generally I just think it's silly and unnecessary. And actually I think it ends up being sort of anti-libertarian.
Simplification.
Politics of self-interest, I thought, is what Rand and Rothbard were about.
It was part of it. Rational self-interest.
Rational,
a human being is an end in him or herself, not a means to other people's ends.
I don't know why they had to tack on this NAP nonsense, but anyway.
Because you talked about the power of ideas in changing things, right? Like 15 minutes ago, and trying to share. But that's an idea.
Which is what I did in front of the Free State Project 2 years ago when I said, you guys need the politics of self-interest. It will help you, not need. It will help you in your own project if you just adopt the politics of self-interest. So that's what I do.
Will it help societal evolution?
If the people that advocate statism adopt this
politics of self-interest, will it get rid of the thing?
Sorry, say it again. I just didn't hear
if the people that advocate and aid and abet statism, if they adopted this politics of self-interest, would it actually change their framework? And would it dissolve statism? Would it abolish it?
Yeah, killer question. Yeah, no. And I deal with this a lot. You know, there's some people who just, man, and I don't think we can explain why, but they just want to rule. They want to rule. They want to control. Right. They want to manage
them. They those.
So the question is, what do you do with those people? Right. Or what do you do? So we can either try to convince, you know, David Petraeus that he should actually, you know, stop trying to rule the world and run people's lives and kill those who get in his way. Right.
No.
I don't think that's going to do too much.
No, we should never do that. That's where I was going with this, right? Like, you came here, you shared ideas with a small group of people, with people who think like 0.1% of the population think. 99% of the population don't have this idea for the self-ownership. They've never taught that. They've never taught about...
But 99% aren't David Petraeus, though. The rulers of the world, the social managers of the world, are a small minority. We are the majority.
You're making my point. Then you're making my point because those are the people you need to convince. There's no point. You're right. If it comes down to writing David Petraeus a letter and saying, look, you've been very bad.
Exactly.
I agree. There's a kind of futility in that.
But if
ideas have the power to change the world, right? If they're adopted and accepted and embraced by enough people, then those are the ideas that we're pushing. Hey, you know, this golden rule, it applies to these people. No matter how many pins that guy has on his green jacket, he doesn't get to initiate force either.
Sure. So there are different kinds of ideas. Of course, ideas change the world. moral ideas, moralistic ideas, absolutely can and have changed the world, right? Usually, by the way, we didn't get into this, but usually in horrific
ways. In horrible ways,
by the way,
right.
Yeah, so again, why do we want to be in the business of creating this new sort of universal claims for all people? I think that's a terribly destructive and anti-libertarian, anti-freedom project. I think it's just the worst thing to do.
The question is whether those claims are going to be objective or not. And what's the reasons for the claim of objectivity?
I think you just try
to falsify the claims. That's the thing. That's what you do with your book, right? To try to falsify these claims based on facts that you know to dispute the veracity of these claims. So that's a process of objectivity, whether you want to believe that or not.
I'm just beating historians at their own game. That's all. I'm playing their game and beating them at it. That's all. That's all I'm doing.
I think you did the thing that I had a problem with again, too, right? This historical argument, when it's like, it's not the same, but it conjures up this image in my mind of a guy in like the 1880s arguing against automobiles. And his rationalization is, when did that ever work? So, yeah, history is a complete shit show when people use these kind of tactics in the past. But we're talking about, I think, something new, something that for the first time has a chance to, like, even though these ideas existed with Rand in the 50s or Rothbard in the 70s or, you know, other people further back than that. What was the French guy, Le Boitier?
Yeah.
You know, back in the 1500s. This is the first chance they've ever had to, like, actually reach people writ large.
No, fellas, I'm an individualist, right? I think you are. At least you think you are.
Okay.
So the very act of making universal claims about human beings is anti-individualist, right? By definition.
We all have hearts. Now I'm a collectivist.
But didn't he make a universal claim right there?
Yeah, I did.
Yes.
No, he.
And now,
yes.
Bad. He made a universal claim, right?
I want to interpret what this thing inside of my chest is. Yeah.
But as conceptual beings, we can't escape universals. All we can do is escape indulging in contradictions, which is what Brett has been saying.
Why do we want to go there? Why do we want to make claims about other people's bodies and minds and needs and desires
be cool,
and the
bro,
way they should live and the way they should think.
And lungs and brains. And it turns out if you fuck up enough of them by, say, beating them when they're kids, you prevent the development of part of their brain. So
the
that's
politics
kind
of
important.
Self-interest deals with that, right? You don't need to go the Molyneux route. You can just say, if you beat your kids, they're going to come beat me up. I'd rather you not do that. Self-interest.
Or they're going to beat themselves up.
Which is what they also
do. Well, that's their business.
Yeah, it is their business, but it's terribly tragic.
Well, yeah.
Well, again, so you're imposing your own, you're projecting onto them.
Do you want human beings to flourish and to be happy or no?
I don't want to determine what happiness is for them. Do you? Well, that's really
that's a different
come
on,
question.
Let's not get fucking silly here.
Wait, that's a different question.
Hold up,
it's not silly.
Let me just explain.
It's a very authoritarian thing to do. Is to make claims about what constitutes happiness for other people.
I'd rather raise my kid to not get happy whenever he rapes another kid. Right? Like, I'd rather that be the case. I'd rather people not like fucking kids. Like, that's. And I know I keep on bringing that up, but it's a really, really important thing to bring up, right? Because I'm bringing up the thing that all four of us would agree is a disastrous thing, right?
Is
the raping of children, right? The raping of children, right? In that particular case. So
and I'm not sure I agree with you, actually.
The ancient Greeks,
pedophilia,
you think of that?
So pederasty, which is the actual sex between adults and children, right? That as a bad thing is quite new. And quite unusual in world history, right?
And so, for
millennia, it was considered to be just fine, or just wasn't thought of at all, one way or the other. And still, in much of the world, it's thought that way now. Do you want to make a definitive claim that actually, in fact, all those children who had sex with adults were harmed by it?
No, well, you changed the definition.
You changed the definition from sex, from rape to sex, which rape insinuates. The initiation of coercion, sex does not. So I wanted to make it.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, I was just getting at where you draw the line between sex and rape.
Yeah, like a 4-year-old and like a 40-year-old man. I got to say, like,
right,
uncouth.
Right. Yeah, so again, that's your right. That's a completely arbitrary line you've drawn. Right.
Completely arbitrary.
It's an arbitrary.
What facts
line?
Are you relying
so
on
right
that
now,
to
right
determine
our
it's
society,
arbitrary?
Right now, we in our society we draw it at 18. Okay, Is that true? Is it when you're 17 and 364 days, it's rape until then?
I think
then?
We all agree that's pretty ridiculous. You know, the arbitrary nature of these.
Well, then why not 16? Why not 25? No,
well, and so you have to look at each 16 in New Hampshire. That's a truth here, right?
But as individuals, we need to look at the development of each individual case to determine if they're able to give consent, like to inquire about that rather than this, you know, labeling of people through laws, right?
So how do you do that?
You treat them as individuals.
Exactly. You get rid of the whole lawmaking system that treats people not as individuals, but as members of a collective.
Sounds, well, for a second there, you sounded pretty relativist. Right? Treat them as individuals. So some four-year-olds might be okay, others not.
No, I would say the development of a four-year-old and okay, so now we're getting into the neurologists and the, you know, the child doctors
more
and so forth.
More maps imposed on the world by scientists.
But those maps are attempts to understand reality, right? That's the whole thing. They're not just arbitrary constructs, because the same could be said with your stance on this, right? It could be just as arbitrary, right? So is the situation where we just give up, like we give up any kind of quest for objective knowledge and we just say, everybody go back to their own corner and get while the getting's good with the self-interest stuff?
I know, and I...
So wait, so listen.
I just want to, like, I just picture, like, spending a day with you and seeing if you completely operate just, like, spitting in the face of every kind of science. Is it, like, physics as you go down the Los Angeles freeway?
No,
okay.
I live according to the rules.
Okay.
All day long, every day, of course. Again, because I live in this culture.
But you're bucking the establishment.
I live inside this map, right? I've chosen to. I don't have to.
Yeah.
But you buck the establishment in the history department, right?
Well, to some extent, yeah. But actually, in some ways, I'm not. In some ways, and this is sort of an irony about my book, is that it's actually, many people, almost no one gets this, is that it's actually fairly conservative. Well, it is conservative quite methodologically, which is sort of what we started with, or Harold, I guess, started with, right?
Yeah.
Methodologically, it's like fucking, you know, as ordinary as anything, right? Totally conservative. I'm completely playing inside their game with their rules. I'm just winning. I'm shooting the three-pointer at the buzzer. That's all, you know, to win as an underdog. I think that's all I'm doing. But it's their game and their rules. That's all.
Okay.
But anyway, I mean, this might help a little bit, guys. Because again, it's like, what does this mean in real life? So if a 40-year-old man, tried to rape my son, who's 12, but if he did it when he was 4 or if he does it 3 years from now, I'd shoot him in his fucking head. Shoot him in his fucking head in a heartbeat. Why? Because it is absolutely naturally essential that my son will be harmed by it. No, it's because he'll probably be harmed by it because the culture tells him it's a bad thing, that it is harmful, the culture. And I don't really, because that is very likely to happen, I will shoot the guy in the head. But all I'm saying is, it's up to debate where my son would get the feeling and the idea that he was harmed. Because most children in human history, as far as we know, didn't have those feelings of being harmed.
It's very convenient for the molesters.
They were also not the ones writing at the time.
Exactly.
We don't know. I mean, there's right. There's a lack of evidence.
You know? Do you know what I mean?
We do have some evidence.
We have our own experience as children, like when our rights were violated, when our boundaries were transgressed. You know, you have abundant evidence.
Boundaries,
from
particular boundaries, and particular rights. Again, right? Those are determined by us, right?
Yeah, like
by individuals.
Those are arbitrary.
Well, here's the thing: is like if we look at if we look at kids who have been repeatedly physically abused, right, versus the brain development of kids who haven't, we can see that there tends to be differences. And that's
what do you mean? You can see where?
Oh, like their actual brain development, the hippocampus,
You talking about brain? You talking about brain scans?
Yeah,
those pictures.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you can see truth in those pictures, huh? You can tell me what I am from a picture of my brain.
Not quite, actually. We got to go to the gut first, and then anyway.
Yeah.
I love brain scans. That's to me, that's the greatest example of this. But anyway.
Oh well, I mean, you could tell. Here's the thing: is you can take a brain scan of me and see the damage that occurred from the fact that I've had 8 concussions while I was boxing and while I was doing football. Right? There are certain parts of my brain that have been damaged, which kind of screwed up some of my long-term and short-term memory, right? So we can see there's physical effects of these particular actions. So it's not just because I believe that me getting hit in the brain fucked up my short-term memory, that that's why my short-term memory is off. No, it's because that had a physical effect, right?
What about one of the first school shooters, the guy who went up on that tower and shot all those people after he killed his wife? And
in Texas? Texas?
Yeah, yeah. And he had no idea what was wrong with him. He said he just had no impulse control, and he couldn't stop thinking all of these thoughts. And he had killed his wife and somebody else. And when they did an autopsy, they found he had a massive brain tumor that was affecting his impulse control.
Yeah, and he actually wrote a note.
The question is, what direction would that tumor take someone? Would it necessarily take him up to the top of a tower with a rifle, right?
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily. Yeah,
exactly.
That story was actually related in the book.
So just the other night, I just heard someone who, he had a stroke and he woke up speaking Chinese fluently.
Yeah. So it was me. I'd be
all sorts of directions.
I'd be burning down houses and jerking off with Carlos. That sounds like an awesome time. That's what I'd be doing if I had no impulse control.
I'd be obviously homeless.
Yeah. All right. So guys, I have 5 minutes left.
Okay.
Okay. So how can we make up?
Was there a third question?
There was 15 questions. So sorry.
Were there really?
Yeah.
You could just read them all and have him answer yes or no to all of them.
Yeah,
all
exactly.
At once.
We'll do what's it called? Lightning round.
Yeah, lightning round.
By the way, I do want to express something, by the way.
Okay.
My frustration in part in regards to this is because I'm talking to a bunch of people who I respect, right? So when I talk to a person who I know is just not very intelligent, and they're just telling me really stupid shit, I generally don't get frustrated or get into that kind of position.
I've seen him. He walks around with balloons and hands them out.
Yeah,
to those
I just
people.
Do that.
Carlos, if you're apologizing to me, don't waste your breath, man.
I'm not.
I love you. Don't.
I love you too. But the thing is it's more a matter of the. I preach this philosophy thing in regards to like stoicism and trying to not get frustrated in these particular cases.
I have a really simple rule about this kind of thing because I deal with it all the time, as you might imagine. I mean, I deal with people getting angry at me all the time for my ideas, as you might imagine. You guys are, by the way, this is mild compared to what I get. I have a really simple rule. As long as it's not ad hominem, you can do whatever you want, right? As long as you don't attack my character instead of my ideas, have at it.
No, we certainly wouldn't call you a kid fucker. Yeah. You know.
No.
That's... Right. Well, yeah. So I get that pretty much every single day. And so as long as I don't get that, I'm fine.
And I wasn't ad hominem-ing you when I talked about you disregarding physics while you speed down the freeway in Los Angeles. Like I'm really interested in that.
Or me about saying the two quarts of
liquor.
That
was an attack on my ideas. Absolutely. I get it. Yeah, sure. Of course. That was totally fair game. Totally fine.
One concern that we have is that you're about to do the Joe Rogan Experience. From there, you're going to blow up. Just you're going to become the biggest thing and too big for School Sucks Podcast and Truth Over Comfort. So we really obviously do hope that that does happen. And a lot more people are exposed to Renegade History.
It's so exciting that you're going to be on that show. I mean, that is like my favorite show to listen to. And after the, I fucking love that show. And Mala News last presentation on that show kind of destroyed everything.
Tell me, what'd you think about
it? So politics is self-interest right now kind of suggests that I shouldn't really say anything in regards to this
because you're tight with Steph, right?
None of us are tight with Steph. I think we all respect Steph, and we all have problems with some of the things that...
Well, just tell me... No, Carlos, okay, tell me about what you thought about the last Rogan thing.
Okay, so basically, there were some statements that he made which weren't necessarily true.
Which ones?
Well, he brought up the fact that the reason why the DMCA claims came out were because...
Which claims?
No, it was an intellectual property claim.
Copyright.
He stated the reason why they went ahead and attacked this company or this other YouTube person was because they were attacking his listeners, which wasn't true. One of the people that he attacked was, but the other person was a guy named True Tribes who was simply editing Steph, not even editing his videos, just taking clips from his videos and showing how Steph's contradicting himself.
I think there's missing information that I would want. right? Yeah. Are those two people connected in any way? Was there an interpreter? Did Steph even know about this, or did his guy who works for him, who probably works 50 or 60 hours a week, you know, handling all his stuff, and I don't know what else he does. How much information did he have? Did they make a bad decision based on a lack of information? I don't know. But like, so, I'm not, and I don't think you're doing it either, right? We're not piling on Steph because
I'm certainly not doing that. What I'm saying is evidence.
Yeah.
It seems to be that there is either miscommunication going on between, say, DeMarco and Steph, and then Steph to Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Or there could be something less nefarious than that or more nefarious than that. And I don't know. And it's hard for me to state. But
yeah,
I'm certainly not going to do some 6 podcast series on it in which I just call him a cultist the entire time.
Right.
And just yell at him and go, now we know that spanking isn't bad for kids because Molyneux said that. And that's kind of the concern that I had, was that Molyneux connected a lot of the dots that needed to be connected in regards to libertarianism and not hitting your fucking kids. That was absolutely integral to the message that we're bringing up. When it comes to living in a peaceful life, we should be discussing also how are we choosing to treat the least defense, the people who have the least amount of defense in society. But so that's when it comes scary, whenever someone, you know, if he makes some incorrect claim, therefore everyone who holds any single view that is similar to Molyneux, therefore you're all full of shit too. And that's the concern.
Yeah.
Guilt by association, so kind of thing.
This is going to be amazing to you because, you know, I have major issues with Molyneux, but all this stuff about the copyright and the cult stuff, I find to be damn near pretty close to ad hominem arguments, and I think it's uninteresting to me, and I'd rather go after his ideas. It's unimportant to me.
I think
let's talk about guys' ideas.
Well, you know? There were a lot of
people. That's probably his point as well.
Yeah, and there are a lot of people who I think are put off by him because things that you would have problems with, right? But he's a very good speaker. He's a very good debater. And I think that there's a lot of people who don't feel like they can take him on head to head, honestly. So they ad hominem and they ad hominem attack him. And that's been all over the internet since 2006.
Can I make a case in regards to that, though?
Attack the guy on his ideas. I don't care if the cult stuff is true. It doesn't matter to me. I want to talk about his ideas.
Well, here's the thing is that they're using his own ideas against him, right? So an idea of his is that, you know, IP is bullshit, but then
they're calling him a hypocrite. But again, what? Everybody's a hypocrite.
Yeah, was a Pendulette's quote. It's great if you're a hypocrite. That gives you twice a chance of me agreeing with you.
Yeah, everybody is.
Yeah.
Give me a fucking break. Martin Luther King slept around on his wife. So what? We're opposed to integration because of that?
When it's brought to light, when you're made aware of the incongruence, no, the question is, are you going to change your course? Are you going to admit that you made a mistake? You know, this kind of thing where it speaks to authenticity, doesn't it? And integrity? I mean,
we have a need
to be consistent. No. And he wants to be consistent, obviously.
This is definitively subjective in that particular case, though, as to whether or not you value those specific things more. Like, the fact that he's
about living according to your principles to the extent where you get rid of people who are statists in your life, that that's an idea, though. That's his idea, and that can be attacked on its own. But whether he lives according to his own principles, to me, is a waste of time, and it's a cheap shot, and, you know, there's no philosophy.
Yeah, it doesn't address the ideas themselves.
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's the real issue.
Let's talk about the ideas. That's what he's about, right? And I want to respect, and I respect ideas enough that I want to get out. God, I hate ad hominem arguments so much.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
I mean this, and here goes the NAP out the window again. Like, I have no problem with punching people in the face when they engage in ad hominem arguments against me.
The main reason why people are able to do ad hominem arguments on the internet is because they're not in a room with you. Because there's that slight threat that you can get punched in the face.
Yeah, it's the difference between the car and the supermarket. You know, cutting somebody off in traffic and bumping carriages with them in the supermarket.
Yeah, but I think we should do it more often. Didn't Cantwell do something like that? Didn't he, like, go to somebody's house?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, like, we should do more of that. Yeah.
Well, being voluntarious, I think we would advocate doing it in your own
mind.
There's
also the Deontay.
Like they do with that hominem.
Carlos, you know Deontay Wilder, the heavyweight champ?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He did that. You see that?
Oh, my God. That was fucking amazing.
saw that, right? Yeah, the troll. He kicked that dude's ass.
No, so what happened is he had this guy who's trolling him who's actually sending his daughter like messages. Like he's just talking all kinds of shit, like you're a piece of shit, yada yada. And this troll said he was a boxer. So they put them both into this like little ring and the troll got his ass just annihilated. But not I mean, and he wasn't even that hard on him. He just like he just hit him and what was hilarious was the guy started walking off the troll again. He goes, "I'll fucking take you next time." And then the boxer came back at him again. He's like, "What did you say?" He's like, "Nothing at all." And
I'm all for that.
I that was voluntary though. You know, that particular case was voluntary. So I don't know.
Yeah, but if Deontay had chased him down and kicked his ass, I'd have been all for that. All for that.
Oh no, we'd have a Ferguson situation. So then. The white guy would then supposedly defend himself.
Holy shit, it just occurred to me how many things we didn't talk about.
Well, like Ferguson?
Okay, how about this? And then we'll let you go.
I'm going to be a huge superstar next week, so I won't have time for you.
I know. Consider, like, if somebody finds some kind of inconsistency in your work and your career falls apart.
Oh, it's impossible.
All right. Maybe like every 4 weeks, every 6 weeks, we can just give you a half an hour to rant in a live format. Would you be into something like that? Because
if you guys want to do another show, I'll do another show. I don't care what the format is, whatever you want to do.
That's awesome.
Oh, and I wanted to clarify one more thing, by the way. Last show, I yelled at Thaddeus regarding the Ferguson thing for like a second.
Yeah.
I realized I was totally incorrect on that. I got to give it to Thaddeus on that. That guy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you told me.
Yeah,
that,
he's a blatant cop killer. That guy was the cop was a piece of shit and he was a racist.
And that's where Molyneux really just is.
Yeah. Whenever libertarians start defending cops, you're going to have a bad time.
Exactly. Thank you. I mean, with Trayvon Martin, I get that Zimmerman wasn't a cop, so there's something there. I get. But when it's a cop shooting someone, fuck off, man. No libertarian should ever be taking that position. Come on. That's ridiculous. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Benefits of this series. Very challenging, very thought-provoking for the audience, for me, for all of us. Mm-hmm. Benefits for Thad. We've introduced him to objectivism. We've turned him on to Stefan Molyneux's video work.
Oh, God.
Plus.
you guys owe me some money for that. Anyway,
One of the reasons why we want to see you blow up in a big way is because, in a good way, I should say, not in a Walmart way, is because you have another book that's coming out called A Renegade History of the World, right?
I have to finish writing it, first of all.
Okay.
Now, in fact, that's what I should have been doing the last 2 hours. So you owe me some more money.
so I'm opening PayPal.
The working title is Blood and Freedom, A Renegade History of America Abroad.
Yes.
Although subtitle, nice. I don't know about the subtitle. I think we might change that. But the title is probably going to be Blood and Freedom. It's a history of both U.S. foreign relations, sort of in the traditional sense of wars and diplomacy and all that, and also what we now call pejoratively globalism, but it's actually a positive interpretation of it. So it's about sort of the spread of American popular culture over the last 120 or so years and how it's had a very salutary effect in degrading and subverting authoritarian regimes from within in other countries. So there's a chapter in Renegade, as you guys know, on how jazz and rock and roll and blue jeans took down communism in the Eastern Bloc. From within, and so it's that argument extended across the world from the Philippines during the Spanish-American War to the present.
Yeah, I mean, Middle Easterners getting, I remember Freakonomics doing a thing about that, Middle Easterners being able to get like MTV, basically women's...
So I've actually written about that I've written about it for a reason, and that's going to be a big part of the book.
Fantastic.
It's going on, man. The war on terror is being won through satellite dishes in the Middle East. People are downloading, you know, just they're streaming just tons and tons of pop culture that is anathema to political Islam. And the mullahs know it, and they're issuing fatwas against it every day. They're freaking out, and their society's changing from within for the better toward freedom. So it's only a question of how long it will take. And of course, military intervention just retards that process, right?
Yeah,
porn beats everything. So the internet will annihilate it. I mean, it really does. It beats everything. Yep. So good for them. Okay. Porn will take down ISIS. That's the name of this new episode.
Nice.
It will.
All right, Thad, we'll let you go. Thank you so much. We've done 310 episodes of my show, and 10 of my favorites were definitely with you. They were awesome. I think you added so much, and obviously... I think all of us look forward to an opportunity to work with you more in the future. And all of course, at the same time, we wish you great success, and we hope that just balances out in a way that makes it all possible.
Cool. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Have a great night.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Hey, girls. Hey, boys. Superstar DJs. Here we go. Somebody say hi.
I want my facts to be fun. Oh my God, Becky, look at this trivia. Sorry. I'll edit that out. First up, we've got Michael P. He's in Beaverton, Oregon. Beaverton. How does a place come to be called Beaverton? Are there beavers there? Yes, there are. They build beaver dams. Well, of course, we have a group of native settlers originally, kind of a nomadic people who relied more on plant materials than actually the hunting of animals, and they were called the Atfalati. We're going back in the late 1700s here. They had a little village in the area called Chickipee, and that means place of the beaver. So, according to Wikipedia, citing Oregon geographic names, Beaverton got its name because of the settlement's proximity to a large body of water resulting from beaver dams. The settlers originally called the area Beaver Dam. Or maybe it was just Beaver Dam. I'm not sure exactly, you know, where they put the emphasis. Up next, we have Tim. Tim R., in Tucson, Arizona. I've been out there, Tim. Watch out for snakes. Oh, Tucson. Consistently rated one of the best golfing destinations in the West by a variety of golfing publications. And why not? With 350 days of sunshine annually, more than any city in the U.S. Also, the world's largest concentration of saguaro cactus. Ooh, and you folks might like this one. The Pima Air and Space Museum is the largest privately funded air museum in the world. So, hey, Smithsonian, go f*** yourself. Up next, we've got Kevin Geary. He's been a guest on the show, and his site is rebootedbody.com. He's in Sugar Hill, Georgia. This from cityofsugarhill.com. How did the city get its name? Many years ago, Buford was a railroad from which several freight wagons traveled regularly to Cumming. The story is that on one of the freight trips, a heavily loaded wagon lost a wheel on a high hill and spilled part of its load, including several large bags of sugar. The wheel was repaired and the wagon reloaded, except for the sugar, which had been broken open and spilled on the hill. The area became known as the Hill Where the Sugar Spilled, but that's a shitty name for a town, so it was shortened to the Sugar Hill and then just Sugar Hill. Sugar Hill existed as a Georgia militia district for many years before it was charted as a city in March of 1939. When they got any beavers, though. Remember from one of the earlier trivias? Okay, thanks so much, Kevin. And next we have, ooh, I can only do this one as Head on a Plate Art. He or she is in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. Well, they've had a couple of famous people come through town and maybe even stay a little while. How about this? In 1968, Hugh Hefner built his first Playboy resort in Lake Geneva. It stayed open until 1981. And it was also the home of Dungeons & Dragons creator Gary Gygax until his death in 2008. Babyface Nelson also lived there. He was a famous bank robber in the 1930s, which means he probably ended a lot of his sentences with the word, "Say, I'm from Lake Geneva, see?" Oh, Christ. And finally, Kalon W. K-A-L-O-N, last initial W. From Oklahoma City. No. Folks, I just need to break a new subscriber geography trivia character here for a second. One of my pet peeves is when you Google the name of a city and then fun facts, and they give you facts that aren't fun. First fact is Oklahoma City is the largest city in Oklahoma. Yeah, frankly, I'm bored. I want my facts to be fun. So hold on, let me pause and I'm going to find some fun ones. Okay, I'm back. You know, I clicked on one that said Oklahoma amazing facts. You want to hear the first one? The first one I read is the world's largest deposit of alabaster is in Alabaster Caverns. I'm done. You know what? You want information on Oklahoma City? Go to anoblelie.com and watch the award-winning documentary, A Noble Lie, Oklahoma City, 1995. Oh boy, I'm going to get mail about that.
New subscriber, geography, trivia.